I was at, I came here from the Long Island Technology Hall of Fame event, and I can't even tell you who was admitted to the Technology Hall of Fame because I'm here. But it was very, it was an interesting thing. I was there as the guest, happily of Carter DeLuca, yay Carter DeLuca. Saw two of my former students, which is always fun. Not only Jan Lucas, who is at Carter DeLuca, but Sharon Barkum, who is off at doing her own really cool patent technology stuff. So a bunch of supervisors. It is it's a tight community. Long Island is interesting. It's both very large. There are 3 million of us here, but also very small. See the same people at the same events. So, but I talked to a lot of people, told them I was teaching licensing tonight. They were all very interested in that. And I suspect that, in fact, I was speaking, one of the people I was talking to was Mike Bielski. I don't know if any of you knows Mike. He has been an adjunct professor here. He is the assistant director of the Center for Biotechnology at Stony Brook. He is also an entrepreneur himself. And he was talking about his business. Okay, so let's see what we have here. Antonio Hanna, Jade. Help me actually remember the right number. I've only been doing that for 6 years. Okay, so if you don't see your name there, it means I didn't get it. Anyway, so Mike had a really interesting business model. He sees himself, because he has a JD and an MBA, and he's been involved in tech transfer and working with entrepreneurs. And he conceives of his profession as intellectual asset manager. He goes to inventors and helps them understand what intellectual assets they have, how to obtain protection of those intellectual assets, and how to best package them to pitch to investors. So think about that. His business model, is it still doing that? His business model is precisely about monetizing licensing, monetizing intellectual property, helping his clients obtain protection, but not just generic protection, strategic protection. Helping them understand what's best of what they have, what's most marketable, how they can protect it best, whether it's trade secret or patent or copyright, and then describe it, which is a very cool job description. And it really brings together a lot of the things we're doing. So if anyone would like to talk to him about that, happy to make an introduction. He does teach here. He's taught our Garage to IPO class a few times, helped Michelle Zacharin put together the entrepreneurship and the law class as well, and is a good person to know. All right, so Phileas and Fogg. You were representing a manufacturer of breakfast cereals and snack bars which wishes to use Phileas and Fogg's characters to promote its existing products. Your assignment was to draft the overall license provisions for the characters, the payment provision, which should be as reasonable as possible, the warranties promises provision for the show's producers makes to your client, the warranties provision that your client will make to the show's producers, really the promises your client will make, a summary of the other key provisions your client will need in the agreement. And we're going to go down and look and hear from each of you what you thought, what your focus was on, and so on. Did any of you seek out licenses beyond those in the TWEN page? And if so, what were they and why? Yeah.
I tried looking up some licenses, some SpongeBob licenses to like.
Did you find any? So, well, those of you who are in the externship class have seen this, but let me help you out after the fact, right? What am I looking for? I just have to figure out where I'm looking here. It's fine, though. Okay, so for the future, if you're looking for precedents, at least to understand what kind of agreements might be necessary, one good place to look is Find Law. So here's Find Law. And you could browse contracts by company name. There are all sorts of contracts. Intellectual property licenses. So this is corporate.findlaw.com, right? So here we have the Powerpuff Girls retail license, Yogi Bear retail license. So you might have been able to find no Nickelodeon here, but they do have the Powerpuff Girls. That's a fun one. We're going to take a look at that a little later on. So there are, were you able to find this?
No.
No, this is a really useful resource. There are limits on how good it is because, as I tell my externs, these are post-negotiation, and you have no idea what the negotiations were all about, but they're a good place to start getting a sort of overall sense. Yep. Okay, well, if you go to, all I did was Find Law Sample Agreements, right? And you can go here, Contracts, Find Law, and there they were. So, for future reference, that's how to find them. And there are a lot of different things here. Okay, all right, so these are some samples. But let's take a look, because each of you will have done something perhaps the same, perhaps different. So in no particular order, except the what it, Windows comes, you know what, we're gonna scramble these. Because it's not fair to Antonio, just because your first name starts with A. Okay. Okay. So this is Bill's. Hey. You know what? Before we even look at this, let me just tell you. This is the first time a lot of you are doing this. And I understand and to a certain extent intentionally didn't give you a lot of background. We're going to go into license agreement provisions. We're going to go over them in more detail. But what the purpose of this exercise was really to get you thinking about the process. What kind of licenses, what kinds of terms. I'm not anticipating that what you draft here would necessarily be what you will draft even 4 weeks from now. So we're all pretty much, most of us, on the same, some of you have actually done this professionally, and it may show. But not to worry, really. This is about, I'm really more interested in your thought process. Okay, so Bill. Are you okay now? What did you use as our model, if anything, or did you just draft?
No, I didn't just write it, but as a reference, there's a PowerPoint one that I use as reference. There was a Marvel Comics one for reference, and just took bits and pieces and tried to write most of it on my own and just kind of follow.
Okay, so what were your key concerns on behalf of your client that you wanted to make sure were addressed in your draft? Okay, so once they obtain the license, your client would not want to have to go back to the Phileas and Fogg people for every setting, everything like that.
I think I wrote something about some type of creative control somewhere, but they had kind
of. Okay. What else? What other major concerns did you have? If any. Or shall we just try to glean from what we have here? Okay. So, let's see. Under the terms and conditions and with the limitations and exceptions here and after set forth very lawyerly, producer, licensor, hereby grants to NOMS, like that, licensee, and licensee hereby accepts the non-exclusive license and right to the fictional cartoon characters. Why did you volunteer non-exclusive? And that's a good answer. All right? To the fictional cartoon characters as they appear in the okay. The characters, including the characters' representations, names, likenesses, and all environmental settings, artwork, and other materials. Your language or Powerpuff Girls type language?
Mostly Powerpuff Girls.
Okay. Audio.
I edited that kind of stuff.
And visual. What? Why did you include audio and visual if you're putting it on a cereal box?
Advertising is for cereal.
Smart. Good. Okay. Solely upon and in connection with the manufacture, promotion, sale, distribution of breakfast cereals and snack bars during the term here and after defined. Exclusivity. The license here and after shall be granted here and shall be non-exclusive for the characters. Okay, so this is actually, you've already said this.
Yeah, there was a subsection for exclusivity, so I just threw it in there.
Okay, we don't just throw. That's bad.
Okay.
Anyone who tells you that lawyering is about bad writing, and I'm not saying you're a bad writer, this was nicely done, but just threw it in there, it gives me hives, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Every word should matter. It should be understandable. And why wouldn't you want to say the same thing or have another provision? Why wouldn't you want to have it here and here?
You can accidentally say different things and have it.
Yeah.
It costs
ambiguity. Either it's exactly the same and it is fully redundant, or if there's any difference, you know, here we have a hyphen, here we don't. Here we don't talk about territory, here we do. So, why the difference? I'm not asking you that, but understand that if there's ever a dispute, they're going to be looking at every possible reason on the other side to invalidate the agreement, to find an ambiguity they can leverage. You want to read this carefully and write it carefully. Okay.
When I was looking through some of the ones that I found as well, some had it broken out and some had it in the first provision. Is there a reason, or is it just person's drafting style?
Mostly drafting style. You want the organization to make sense. You don't want to put things that are just, because anyone who's reading it, you want them to be able to find it. as we'll, you'll see when we get into provisions, and that's, again, I've shown my externs, my personal preference is when I'm talking about technical specifications, business terms, lists, I like to put them as exhibits rather than putting them within. That has, as long as your contract says somewhere, probably near the bottom, the exhibits are incorporated herein by reference, the exhibits are made part of the agreement and enforceable, then it doesn't matter from a legal perspective. I find it easier to allow the lawyers to look at the lawyerly stuff, the clients to focus on the business stuff. But either way, putting definitions in a paragraph versus a definition section doesn't matter. Sometimes you're going for a particular tone. Sometimes it's just easier for you to break out certain sections. It doesn't necessarily matter as long as what you write is understandable and consistent. But it's a very, very solid question. Okay. The license hereby granted extends to the territory, including North America, including the United States and Canada, and Latin America. I'm not. Licensee may sell the licensed product either to jobbers, wholesalers, or for sale, refill, or ad distribution. Wait, either to jobbers. I think that either there is probably not necessary here. For sale, resale, and distribution directly to the public, licensee may also sell the licensed products or any online network or service. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Anyone see a potential rights issue where this paragraph may contradict itself?
Based,
you put this on your website, you're now outside of the territory. So if you're representing, particularly if you're representing the user, the licensee, you might want to say that the product distribution, the intended market for your products is this territory. But your use of the intellectual property has to be beyond. You would probably want to ask for worldwide. Because you're putting it online, because someone might take your cereal box and sell it somewhere else, resell it somewhere else, and you don't want to be found to be infringing because your product is using this mark outside of the United States or Canada. So don't limit yourself unnecessarily in what you draft. Yes, you want to be fair. But here, even within the paragraph, okay? All right, so the term, we have a 5-year term. Okay, so let's see. Consideration. With respect to the licensed products, licensee shall pay to licensor a sum equal to 5% of all gross sales by licensee or any of its affiliated, associated, or subsidiary companies. Gross sales shall mean all currency billed or billable. Did you draft this, or is this from something?
It's from, but I modified it. I didn't just copy everything. I modified words.
Okay, let's just say from this exercise, it's rights distributed sale. Gross sales shall not include any internal sales or any affiliated companies with the purpose of resale at a later date. Okay. Royalty shall be payable on the first quarter of every term. Any late payments in excess of 30 days shall be subject to a 2% levy on the gross sales during the preceding quarter. Say a 2% levy, does that mean that it's 2%, so it would be a 7% royalty, or does that mean 2% more of the royalty?
Whatever the 7%, 5% was, so it might not add up to 7%, so whatever 2% or 5% is.
Well, that's not what this says. This says 2% levy on the gross sales. So what did you intend, right? Did you intend to say that the royalty is basically multiplied by 1.02? Or did you intend to say that the royalty went from a 5% royalty rate to a 7% royalty rate?
Not the 7%.
Okay, but that's what this says, right?
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with you.
Okay. All right, so gross sales, but not internal sales. Is that something, you can certainly see that that might be something that the, yes, the, even with my half hearing, I can half hear that, that the licensee would want, or sorry, the licensor would want. But licensee, when you say billable, there are a lot of possibilities with retail, actually with wholesale. You might have returns. You might have other kinds of issues with, and you may bill out to your wholesale customers, the retailers, they may not pay. Right, this is the kind of provision that is much more beneficial to a licensor than a licensee.
So you can like double, because obviously you're going to get the contracts with your wholesale, you can cover costs on the pay, but you want to try to protect yourself on multiple levels. Kind of.
You do, but if this is your starting point, you want to be fair, but if this is your starting point, you lose the ability then to redefine that for all of the other costs. Your marketing costs, your losses due to spoilage, due to anything else, the non-payment. You can no longer, representing the licensee, introduce those concepts because these are your words. So you have to be very focused on the balance. Don't give away what your client needs here. Royalties shall be payable, let's think about this too, on the first of every quarter during the term. Based on what? In your mind. So here it is, March 30th quarter ends. Mm-hmm. April 1st, I have to pay royalties. That's what the contract says. Based on which quarter?
Well, preceding, I didn't write preceding quarter. But I should have got some grace as far as, you know, not later than 2 weeks after
the
first quarter or whatever.
Is 2 weeks enough to know all the sales figures? Right. So you may not get paid. For the sales that happened in the last week in March, you may have a net 60, where your client doesn't get paid for 60 days. So I realize you didn't have the fact pattern. But in thinking about it, what you don't want to do is make it so you owe before you've been paid.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so licensor warrants it. Well, it has the rights to license the characters. The making does not violate any agreements, okay? It shall not unilaterally terminate.
I made this whole thing up. It could be garbage.
That's fine. No, it's not that it's garbage. It's not. That's not really a warranty. A warranty is a promise about status,
okay.
Right? If you want to talk about termination, that goes in the term and termination provision. It shall not interfere with the manner in which licensee conducts. Uh-oh. Little green line. Okay. There's a really, I know we're spending a lot of time on yours, and part of it is because, you know, there's a significant provision here that a licensee would want. You say you have the right to license, but there's sort of a precursor to that that isn't here.
All the rights to the characters.
Where's the ownership?
Is there revoke his ability to license
them? Well, no. Licensor has to promise, we own these things. It's not just we have the right to license them, we own them. Right? Because if you don't have that, anybody could say, you know, the point is you want to be dealing with the owners. And you want them to promise they own all the relevant rights. So there's no third party who could say they didn't own them in the first place. So that has to really be here. Okay? Best efforts to manufacture the licensed products within the territory. It will not cause harm to the goodwill through any ethical practices. Well, that's more of an intention one. Comply with all laws and regulations. Why are we not asking the licensor not to comply with all laws and regulations or remain in compliance? Comply with all design changes, okay, if given 90 days written notice. Better way to do that is to make it an affirmative obligation. To the extent that the characters are changed, you will provide me with this and that and the other thing, etc. Additional provisions, insurance, penalties for breach, sublicensing, work made for hire, for any copyrightable material resulting from the use. What did you mean by that?
Obviously they can't alter the characters, but they, you know, where they put it on, you know, they just lost the trademark. What was this?
Well, who should own the advertising materials?
The advertising materials, that's Person Armor's breakfast cereal.
So what's the work made for hire part then?
If they have an outside design.
Third parties are doing.
But as between these two parties, is anyone doing a work made for hire for the other?
No, I mean, it can't be construed that way with paying the royalties and just consideration.
There's no, I mean, that's about copyright of creative works.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what you were thinking there. Mm-hmm. That's my question. And apparently you aren't at the moment. If it comes to you, let us know. Indemnification, quality of goods, much more detailed. Yes? This was actually, yes, light, but that was the assignment. So I think solid job there. No, yes, because we changed the grammar. Okay, Victor. Legal agreement. Okay, so we picked some brands here.
Yeah.
Apparently Kellogg's and Nickelodeon. Okay. All right, hold on a second. That's okay. I want you to read this first sentence. I'll read it. This is a legal agreement between Kellogg Cereal and Nickelodeon Group, which produces the cartoon series Phileas and Fogg, a business unit of Viacom Media Networks, a division of Viacom International, Inc., Nickelodeon, covering Kellogg's use of the characters. So wait. Nickelodeon Group, which produces the cartoon series Phileas and Fogg, a business unit of... So Phileas and Fogg is a business unit of Viacom Media?
No.
It doesn't quite scan. The phrase is... Okay, by accessing and using the character's likeness, Kellogg's is hereby agreeing to be legally bound by the terms of the agreement. Something tells me that when you were looking for examples, you were going for some sort of a shrink wrap online license. As your model for this?
I was looking at two separate things. I was looking at one Nickelodeon license that they were giving away a software.
Okay, so,
for someone. And I was looking at another license that was a SpongeBob license or something, but it wasn't the full license that was attached.
Right, did you look at the license agreements that were on the TWEN page?
I did, but I didn't know exactly which one would...
Which, all of them. This. But let's ask the sort of process question. Two companies, right? Major cartoon producer, major food products producer. How likely is it then that the agreement will be executed by using the characters? What this says is Kellogg's is bound by it the moment it uses the characters, like software. Would that be the kind of contract execution that these two big companies are likely to have for this major licensing deal?
Guess not, just by the way you posed the question.
That's correct. Why not? What kind of transactions do you think have the, by using this, you're deemed to agree?
Well, what was going on in my head when I was looking at
it? Yeah, please.
When Kellogg's uses the brand and actually uses the characters, at that point, when the character actually gets stamped on the serial or when they had to start abiding by the rules and the terms of the contract.
Really? So
I mean, that's
the point where they're putting the materials together, the point where they're putting together their ad campaigns. They don't have to license the characters then. They don't have to, they're not bound by anything until the boxes are printed?
I guess so. Because when the boxes are printed, that's when the full likeness of the characters arrives. No? When it's all...
You need to think about this. Two big companies working together, right? This is not just the license for IP. This is the establishment of the business relationship where they're going to be working together and sharing materials and doing whatever, right? First of all, that kind of agreement is going to be negotiated. These sorts are not. By using it, you agree means we've never met. We're not signing anything. This kind of an agreement will be signed. But also, the stamping on the box is just one part of this. They're going to be working together long before those boxes are actually put into the printer. And so both parties also have to be bound, right? You want Nickelodeon to be bound by its obligations. What this says is, by using the likenesses, Kellogg's is hereby agreeing to be legally bound. Why would you volunteer that on behalf of Kellogg's? You want to make sure that Nickelodeon, in this context, agrees to it as well. So, okay, so title ownership rights and intellectual property shall remain at all times Nickelodeon. Okay, the characters are protected. So that's sort of a warranty. The first is, there are two things going on here. One is Nickelodeon saying, we are not transferring. Not that they shall remain, but this is not going to transfer those rights. It is just a license. And in turn, Kellogg's wants Nickelodeon to say, by the way, we represent and warrant, we promise, we own them. So it's really two things in this provision. Both of the ones you have here are important concepts. They do need to be here, but not grouped the same way. One is the grant of license as opposed to a transfer of ownership. And you would say nothing in this shall be deemed to be any transfer of ownership. And the other is a promise that they own it to begin with. Two separate provisions. Okay, scope of license. A personal, again, that comes out of your precedent. Personal to whom? Mr. Kellogg?
Yeah, I guess so.
This is you were looking at a one-user software license.
Right, right.
Non-exclusive, non-assignable, non-transferable license without right of sub-license. Do they need to sub-license? In order to do this,
right,
would Kellogg's need the right to sub-license? Your client?
No. Well, they might need
to. To whom? That wouldn't be a sub-license, would it? Because it's the same licensee. It's Kellogg's. It's just, it's a scope of license. To whom else would...
Retailers?
Not the retailers, because the retailers, it's just products they're selling, right? Except maybe for the image of the box. So yeah, perhaps, as part of... Less likely, because usually that's just showing the goods being sold, unless they're doing some sort of cooperative advertising where they help retailers. Cooperative advertising is where the manufacturer pays for part of the advertising budget of the retailer in order that they can jointly. So why is it that Toys R Us advertises these toys and not those toys? Sometimes it's because the manufacturer of these toys pays Toys R Us to pay Toys R Us to put a Toys R Us advertisement with these toys in it. So yeah, in those cases, they might have to sublicense. But more directly, in order to do what they're supposed to do, Are there any third parties involved?
What about magazines?
What about magazines?
Coupons, magazines.
What about them?
Wouldn't they need also permission from Nickelodeon to use the likeness of those two characters if they're promoting the serial with those two characters?
Possibly. How do those coupons get created? How do the boxes get created?
It's by Kellogg.
So they make cereal, and they press paper pulp into cardboard, and they print on it through a printing company, right? They may have their own, but it's entirely possible they outsource printing of labels and packaging and everything else. And the printer is going to need a license to put those things too. That license is going to come from Kellogg's. That's a sub-license that it absolutely needs. Yeah.
I know we're going really, really in depth on a lot of these things. I'm understanding, you're trying to understand the companies. How realistic is it that in depth do the lawyers get? Like, do they actually sit and go through all these possible scenarios of trying to understand the business, or is it more just, do they try and do just something general?
Which approach do you think is less likely to lead to litigation later on? Oh, yeah.
But I'm assuming that if you're a Nickelodeon, you're doing this nonstop with all these different...
So you may have your standard licensing terms. But part of this is, and the part that has absolutely no relevance to most of you, if not all of you right now, is there's a certain amount of experience. You know, I sound really old and fogey-ish. But there's a certain amount of experience that comes with doing this. So if you are drafting for Kellogg's, right, you know, because you're counsel for Kellogg's, you know how your client does business. And hopefully the business people will actually negotiate at all of these points, and the lawyer's job is largely to draft what's already been done. Because as I said, I think before, you would rather not be renegotiating or negotiating the business deal, especially if you're outside counsel. It's very expensive. Clients get resentful when, in fact, the client should have just done it ahead of time. But different story.
So I was thinking back to like wills, for example, when you brought up knowing when they're getting payment and not from, say, the Stop and Shop that they sell.
But remember, who was drafting wills? It was Kellogg or Noms drafting wills. So he should know. Not say he personally will know because it wasn't in the fact pattern. But in thinking about it, knowing your client's business, whatever that is, you will draft in order to make sure you're not binding your client with something it's not able to do, or not getting what your client needs to do. So any food manufacturer is probably going to have a printing company of some sort, an advertiser, some other third party service provider for it, for which it will need some kind of sub-license right. But if you're counsel to the food company, you think, okay, I need my sub-license right. But in order to get that successfully, I better not ask for too much. Let's try to at least anticipate, even if I don't draft it, anticipate what pushback I'm likely to get. What are they going to tell me? Well, they're going to tell me that my license is going to have to be, if I have any sort of exclusivity, it's only going to be within this particular, very defined product category and probably geographic category. Because otherwise I'm going to have to pay a greater royalty. So how do I want to do that, or at least I can anticipate that that's going to happen, right? Let's see. Their whole business model is based on the integrity of their artwork. So they're going to want to check to make sure that when I design my cereal box, the character looks right. In fact, they've got professional artists used to drawing this character. I might want to build into this agreement the possibility that I could hire them, that you do have a work made for hire, perhaps. Maybe that's what he was thinking. There you go. That I could hire their artists to design my cereal box for me, so that it will look right. and then we'll figure out who owns that and how they get paid and everything else. Same with the artist, you know, when, you know, I don't know who animates the Pebbles commercials. Does Post find its own animation studio, or did they go to Hanna-Barbera, or whoever owns Hanna-Barbera this week, and say, could you make me, with your voice actors, a Pebbles commercial? You know, like when Winston, right? Winston didn't get its own artists to draw the Flintstones. They had the Flintstones people do it with that creepy photographic-looking Winston cigarette package. So, to a certain extent, there's going to be some learning. To a certain extent, there's experience involved. But what you don't want to do is avoid the things your client needs. You may want to leave the others, right? And at least you tell your client, we're probably going to get some pushback, and here's why. You don't want to volunteer it, but you do want to make sure, right? So, okay, so warranties. This, I realize we're being in, but understand that if you look at the precedents, the other licenses, that's not going to be what's in a warranty. This is an assignment clause. And that's a separate section. Under what circumstances may either or both parties give their rights over and their obligations over to a third party? Do they need consent? Do they not need consent? So that's, and there's also termination here. That would be in a termination provision.
Would you say that would be called assignments?
Usually there's an assignment provision. Or maybe it's under general terms, but it's not a warranty. A warranty is a promise about that something is true or isn't true. We own it, we don't own it. We're allowed to enter into this agreement. We're not breaking any other agreements. No, it's not. This is a warranty. Actually, the warranty would be that, not that they're protected, but that Nickelodeon promises it owns the characters and has the rights to license them. Okay, and there are some other provisions here. As you can see, there are other things that you might have wanted to do here. But again, given the precedent, solid. Okay. Apparently Phileas and Fogg are in Garden City, on Old Country Road. What?
Very close to each other as well.
It's a really busy, so if they're on Old Country Road in Garden City, it means you can't park anywhere near the offices. Okay. Okay, so
not
the
overnight, though.
What?
Okay.
I know when Ruskin Moscow used to be, was it Ruskin? Yeah, when they used to be over in Garden City, they had like two spaces in the parking lot. It was just not good when we had to go over there. Okay, so intellectual property, the fictional characters as they appear, as follows: Phileas and Fogg. Licensed property, names, do we want to include voices? That's a question for the client.
That was kind of a mental note to myself.
By the way, it is perfectly acceptable, and in fact, probably, let me give you the caveat on there. Let's start with, it is perfectly acceptable when you're drafting something for your client to review first, to ask your client questions in the text. My tendency is bold brackets. Put them in brackets, sometimes, you know, all caps, bold language, question to client, colon, here, right? Because you don't necessarily know when you're drafting. But let me give you the really important caveat, the really important warning. Never put anything into those questions that would be disastrous to your client if it went on to the other side, because I can guarantee you, as many times as you tell your client, don't email this, don't send this, talk to me first, we have to clean it up, it will happen that your client will simply hand it off to the other side, questions not only unanswered, but right there. You know? Are we okay doing this? given that we're negotiating with their competitors? Ah! It's going to happen. And I'm not even sort of getting into the show changes, mark changes thing. I'm talking about right there in front. Happens all the time. So, but it's fine to ask your client. Okay, we're going to need a definition of net sales, which
yeah,
is probably...
Yeah, I just thought that was important. I put that stuff down below, stuff that
okay,
I read
so, out. Okay, so... So upon execution, subject to a term, licensor grants the licensee, hereby accepts. There's this sentence doesn't quite scan. Hereby, Herbie grants, does say Herbie. Hereby grants licensee, and licensee hereby accepts the terms of this agreement to utilize the intellectual property. Shouldn't there be a grant of a license? It's just not there. Just as you read through it, does it say grant? What are they granting? They're granting, there's a noun missing. Okay, they utilize the intellectual property. Once you've defined something, by the way, if you've defined it properly, you don't have to have the quotation marks. You do want to capitalize it to show it's a defined term. Solely for the commercialization and promotion of licensee existing breakfast cereal, which licensee manufactures. These aren't new products?
I believe that in fact patents had existed breakfast cereal and snacks.
Yes, it did. Okay, good. License granted shall be exclusive within the United States. We pointed out the challenges with that. Licensee should not be permitted to assign or transfer, otherwise dispose of any of all the rights without prior. Again, there might be, if you're representing licensee, you might want to build into, if you think about how your client does business, et cetera. Okay, we have a term. Okay, terminated. Would have to be fleshed out a little bit more. Guarantee a minimum of consideration.
The dollar amount that I didn't really know.
That's fine. Okay, so we have a minimum fixed fee and then royalty payments. 10% of net sales if it's greater than 500,000. Okay, but what about, are you netting out the 25,000 from the royalty? Meaning is the first, are you saying that, that's what the kinds of questions
yeah,
you'd want to ask.
Yeah, I'm saying it's basically $100,000 okay. In order to get the use, and then you're guaranteeing the royalties.
Okay, warranties, must receive prior written approval, not really a warranty, not to use intellectual property, sort of a warranty. Best efforts to protect goodwill. A couple of you have had that already. What does that require your client to do? You've drafted it. Your client says, I want to be a good corporate citizen. I want to follow the contract. Give me a list of tasks that I must accomplish and things I must avoid in order to comply with that provision. What do you tell your client? What is best efforts to protect goodwill?
Maybe stay in compliance with the contract and the law of that jurisdiction.
See, I start to have a problem with the word maybe.
Best efforts is subjective and it's safe for use commercially.
It's not just subjective. Best efforts is actually a loaded phrase because what it says is even if it's going to cost your client money, even if it's going to lose money, that's what best efforts means. Commercially reasonable, you're not going to, you know, it's not reasonable. I don't want to lose money. Best efforts, even if you have to lose money, you have to do everything. That's a very dangerous thing. First of all, it's a dangerous thing to volunteer. But secondly, it's a very vague kind of an obligation. You want to avoid obligating your client vaguely. Best efforts to market.
I want to make sure they're spending a specific dollar amount.
Well, if they've already agreed to a specific, a minimum royalty, that's already an incentive enough, right? Okay. So here too, we don't have warranties of ownership. That's what a warranty would be here, all right? So net sales, so we need the definitions. Dispute resolution, governing law, good. Insurance indemnification, Okay, confidentiality, good, because each is, you think, what's confidential? They're putting it on a cereal box. But it's always useful to, and we'll come back to this, to put a confidentiality provision in an agreement where the companies are just going to be dealing with each other on a regular basis. You don't want to, well, I should, let me step back for a second. Of course you all realize that a confidentiality provision doesn't mean that things will be kept confidential. It can only prohibit disclosure. It can't prevent disclosure. But if both parties are protected, generally speaking, by at least the contractual obligation of the other party to keep stuff confidential, they will worry less about talking about business plans. We're thinking about expanding into this market. Here's how we print. Here are our new character designs. What do you think? Here's the show that we're thinking about doing with these characters. What might you do to help us promote that on your serial? Those are conversations that go well beyond the specifics of this license. But you want, that's why I always put a confidentiality provision in an establishment of a business relationship contract, because it means that both parties may feel more free to discuss it and make the deal better for both sides. Okay, audit rights, so that if you're doing a royalty, making sure that the licensor can come in and say, is it calculated properly? Good. Good start. Yes? What do you mean? It's a breach. It's a breach, and it gives the other party. So what are the consequences? If it's deemed to be a breach, or they could make an argument, let's say they want to get out of this deal and the contract, your client is the cereal manufacturer, and you've got plans to sell this for the next 3 years, and you've made printing contracts, and you've bought futures for corn, right? Because you're anticipating needing corn at this price to sell, all those things, right? They don't think a week ahead. They're thinking years ahead. And let's say that the cartoon company can get a better deal from somebody else. They're going to look at the contract and say, can we get out of this? Hey, look, best efforts, goodwill. Let's make an argument that we're pretty confident, right? Will at least give us a potential breach of contract action. And we're going to say, hey, this is your notice, this is a breach. By virtue of the breach, we're hereby terminating the agreement as of now. Right? And then it's just the cereal company has a choice. Fighting them in court or figuring something out. That's why you don't want to have this sort of, I mean, you could have something if nobody could say you did or not. But if you're going to obligate yourself to the best efforts, mm-hmm. and you could fail to do that in some potentially arguable way, that's where the consequence is. Okay. It gives an out or a breach to the other side. Okay. So here we have a license agreement. Sean, what was the sort of precedent that you used?
And I predominantly use those two. But what I was thinking with this agreement was I wanted it to be more of a trial period. So this one didn't include online advertising, TV advertising. I wanted it to be like the two companies trying something new and kind of testing the market.
Okay.
So I limited the content of affiliated.
Right, well, there's that. The problem, though, is it realistic, especially if you're representing the licensee, is it realistic to say that we're only going to put it on boxes and it's not going to be any advertising or online?
I was thinking there's plenty of things in the supermarket that I never see commercials for, and they may exist. I'm not just saying my eyes are...
But maybe it's on their website. Here are all our products. Maybe it's in coupons, right? That if you want it to be a limited trial, have a short term to renegotiate. Have it on one kind of cereal. But to limit by media is not a realistic limitation. By the way, I have to thank you, because I do appreciate when people take my attempts at pop culture seriously and respond back. I will point out to everyone that not only does Sean realize I was going for the Phineas and Ferb reference, but he has Phileas and Fogg on Perry Street in Platypus, Florida. Well done. I get it. Thank you. And Joyful Puffs is on Post Boulevard in Kellogg, New York.
What are the characters?
Perry the Platypus. All right, so Phineas and Ferb is the real cartoon that I ripped off for this fact pattern.
What is that?
Phineas and Ferb, it's a Disney Channel. It's actually one of the better Disney Channel because it's subversive. There's a lot of really good subversive humor in it. And anyway, Phineas and Ferb are these two half-brothers or something. I think they're half-brothers because one has a British accent. Oh, so it's like the Bradys. They're not even half-brothers. Okay, they're step-brothers.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so whose parents were Candace?
Mom.
Mom, okay. They have an older sister named Candace, and Phineas and Ferb are very creative inventors during their summer vacation, and they have a pet platypus named Perry, who, unbeknownst to them, at least for most of the series, is a secret agent. And what?
Has an unbelievable laugh.
Yes, he probably does.
Where's my Perry?
Where's my Perry? And there's some great songs. I could play them for you, but it'll waste time. Anyway. Okay, so we have here terms and conditions, okay. Licensee's product packaging refers to the outside portion of the actual cereal container and snack bar container manufactured. So that means what? Okay, so we can't have Phileas-shaped puffs?
No.
Okay.
I wanted just the box, the cover of the box, because I was, like I said, I wanted it to be very limited in that it was like a
right, but again, you have to think you don't want to limit your own client. Okay, so we have a one-time fee.
I just don't know how popular the show is.
Well, fair enough. Okay, so let's see. $5,000 to licensor upon licensee reaching a 10% increase in sales. Okay, so this is not a royalty of sales. This is, if we're successful, we'll pay you something.
And they do get a flat fee in the beginning, so.
Okay, whether or not that would ultimately fly, at least you've thought it out. Okay, so we have audits, disclaimer of warranty is rights to license, okay.
I realize I made it, like, after you were talking about the sub-license, I put it in.
Right. Okay. And we don't have here a warranty of ownership. Phileas and Fogg are not saying, the producers are not saying they actually own the characters. That's something you would want to have a warranty. Okay. So we have limits on the license, the scope, right to renew. Okay. Home state. Thank you. We're going to get into that when we talk about terms. Termination for cause. Good. So hitting the main points. What we're licensing, for what, where, when, how much. Okay. All right. This is a sparsely drafted. Here we have. So, Joan, what was the precedent, if any?
Marvel.
Okay. Okay, Phileas and Fogg has the rights in, so that would be the warranty.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't say that, but it's good to have that here. Licensee agrees to pay licensor. Okay, where is the actual grant of license? We're kind of missing the actual license part, right? Am I not seeing something that's actually here? Oh, here it is. Okay, so warranties provisions.
Yeah.
So it's, okay, grants the licensee the non-exclusive right to utilize licensor's property. So we do have a license provision. It's just called warranties.
Yeah.
Okay, and up here, the warranties are in the license provision. Okay, that makes sort of sense. Okay, it is not, that wouldn't be a warranty. That's simply saying what the license isn't. It's not, warranty would be, this is true about us.
So where would that be?
This?
Yeah.
That would be, it might not actually be necessary, because if you say this is the license, it implies that everything else isn't the license. But if you want to say this, first of all, remember, you're representing licensees. You don't want to volunteer this. But if you do, it would be right after the, this is the grant of license, and then it would be licensee acknowledges and agrees that the grant of license does not mean anything else, including. Okay? Licensee is not licensed to, will not knowingly sell, meaning it's not getting any ownership. Right? I think that's what you sort of meant by that. Okay? Other key provisions, reservation of right. What does that mean? To do what?
To do anything.
Okay, probably not necessary because they own it. It's sort of implied. Duration, good. Quality of goods, what does that mean? Okay, again, who would likely want to ask for that? Right, so you may not want to volunteer it up front. You may just tell your client, by the way, they may want to verify, you know, do quality and ask for it. Okay.
So if you're representing the licensee and you have to do an assignment like this, do we have to then just disregard that and leave the licensor, or should we just add it in there?
I would say, okay, it's a tough call. A couple of things that at least my view on this would be. Unless there's some strategic reason to make a nasty agreement, you don't want to make an unfair nasty agreement. But you don't want to add in things that A, the licensor might not ask for, because maybe it's comfortable with the quality of the product and it figures you lose more than it does by selling the products, and B, that are going to cost your client money. What does that mean to let somebody in to give them quality control? There's a process there. So I wouldn't, in the first instance, volunteer that. Unless there's some reason why your client needs to have some sort of quality control or pre-inspection of the licensed products. In which case, you could either say, we know we're going to get client, I'm putting this in, you know we're going to get pushback, or I'm putting this in, but I'm choosing to make it a reasonable, right? Since I know they're going to ask for it, let's put it in here in a way that we could best live with, right? Rather than say quality control, we could say that we will follow all FDA rules, which we'll do anyway. Or that, you know, if we have a choice, the licensor we'll have the opportunity to approve, you know, from among a list of possible flavor combinations. Something like that, that's not overly burdensome, unrealistic, that I would put in. But to say they get to decide if we're allowed to sell our cereal, there's no good reason, unless the business people have already negotiated that, to put it into the first draft of the contract. Okay, good. Right. I know we're running low on time. Okay. Best efforts.
I defined it in my own way.
Yes, you did, but that doesn't necessarily. Okay. So they're going to willfully. All right. So that's more of a warranty. That they will do nothing. That's actually an appropriate statement in the warranty that licensee will do nothing to impair the rights of licensor. That's how you would put that in a warranty. Okay, so we have cartoons are defined, licensee, licensor, net sales. All right, so we have some things that are cut out. Products, release, okay. So licensed property are the cartoons, main characters, okay. Grant of rights, single user license. Probably not the right word here. Single user generally refers to an individual as opposed to a corporation. If you want to say non-transferable, but you, this is talking about an entity, right? Non-exclusive, non-transferable, revocable, okay? Prohibited from sublicensing. We talked about these, right? That there are some, okay? Use, I'm not sure if cartoons would be the right, you get to choose which terms you want to use. And cartoons would not generally refer to characters. It would refer to the animated products, including the characters. You might want to call them characters instead of cartoons. Okay, termination of expiration. Okay, so we have rights to terminate, right to renew, payments. So we have some royalties here. Okay. Licensor will receive, they're going to pick, they're going to pay a license fee of $3 for each 8x10? Really? Cost them 3 cents to produce, but they have to pay a license fee of $3 for each one? Yeah, I do. I would love to hear what you, okay. Warranties, 2 licensee. Okay, good. Free in any defects, that they won't change the characters. Not sure that they, unless each change is agreed to, not sure they would do by licensee. Okay, continue to broadcast. Good. Stay in business. Make this worth our doing. Okay. So you have some good promises of warranty. Territories. We talked about the international issues. Breach. Merger clause. Okay. Consideration. Reservation of rights. Quality control. All right. Books and records. Insurance, indemnification, good, requests, lots of good provisions, good. Okay. Mary?
Yeah.
Same comment I had for Victor. Is this really the type of structure that a major food manufacturer would enter into? By copying or otherwise using the characters, you agree to be bound by the terms of this license agreement, not this context. If you do not agree, return the copy. Return. This is a shrink wrap license that you've got right here. When you say the actual images, what does that mean? Right. So what? A piece of paper with a picture on it? Again, this is a business relationship established between two companies. They don't establish, yeah, if the company is installing Microsoft Office, they're not going to necessarily be negotiating licensing terms. But this is a negotiated agreement which will be signed. It doesn't get entered into by default, and you don't call 800 number to request a refund. It just doesn't belong here. Yeah, Mary, I think I would, can you just come talk to me after class about this? Because, okay. All right. Okay, so I think we've sort of run out of time. I think that most of you have really grasp this, but you also begin to see the challenges that you've got to anticipate your client's needs. To a certain extent, you have to anticipate the other party's needs and figure out what it's going to ask for, right? You have to put the things in the right locations. You have to make sure you get the license, and it has to be something that you can explain to your client, that you could, at the end of the day, whatever you come up with, you can say to your client, you must do this, you must not do this, you may not, right? And so it's important to really not put anything into a contract you cannot define and explain. This was, I think, a really good starting point, so well done to all of you. Yep. Did you not see yours?
I didn't see it.
I will check. Hold on, let me bring it back up. I can't make it any bigger. Are you there? I might have missed an email if it's not actually there. Yeah, I don't necessarily see it, so I'm going to have to check. Okay, so resend, and I'll look meanwhile.